Right, good morning, everybody. Today is Monday, February 22nd, 2016. And this is Before the First Cup of Jewels here on UCY.TV. Happy Monday, everybody. I'm back. Yeah. And it was a long 10 days of playing cruise director with the kids are back to school. It is 29 degrees and partly sunny here in upstate New York. It actually feels a lot warmer than 29. I was hearing birds all singing and thinking to myself, wow, it's almost spring, but 29 is still a little chilly. So what has happened since I had to take a short little hiatus? Well, I'll tell you something I discovered this morning. I don't know. I've been having a hard time trying to get motivated around here. It was a rough 10 days. And I went and hit up the show from two Fridays ago. So that's usually what I do. I go through, I take a look what we talked about, and then we dovetail it and continue on. Except I noticed something very disturbing. You know, we talked last week or the week before, last week, 2 weeks ago, about censorship, Google Truth algorithm, the changing of the reins of the guards from the search engine head at Google to now the AI head taking over the search engine. And at that same time, they had released a new algorithm that is rumored to have the new truth algorithm built into it, the one that Bill Clinton called for back in 2011. We need a truth algorithm to protect us from that pesky internet. And now that pesky internet is causing so many problems for those in charge because there's just too much damn truth getting out on it. So what I noticed back a few weeks ago is in YouTube, in the description section, where, yes, I put large numbers of links and notes for everything that I discuss. What I noticed is when I would be in the editing portion and I would go in there, because when I click on something and it's my account, it takes me directly into editing mode. But what I noticed was that the hyperlink that I left for the story that I had talked about yesterday, let's say, was truncated. So it was, you know, the first maybe five or six slashes, you know, UCY.TV/pages/whatever. And then there were three dots at the end. And I had seen that before because that's how the YouTube API works, which we do a lot of work with. It truncates like that with the three little dots. Anyway, I come back this morning because, you know, when you have a URL that takes you to a page, I don't know, you just erase half of it. What do you think happens to that URL? Oh, 404 file not found. Yeah, that's what happens. So this morning, so it was last week, 2 weeks ago, I saw that. I noticed that it was happening, but only when I was in the edit mode. This morning, I went and I grabbed two Fridays ago shows. We could kick it off from there. By the way, where did we leave off? It was called $19 billion cybersecurity, NSA 21, federal PsyOps, and Internet of Things spying. Yeah, and they blocked monetization on that one too. Isn't it amazing? Like, anytime we talk about cybersecurity or Google, they tell me I have some sort of copyright, but I don't because, hey, all we do is talk now. But I go out there this morning to go hit some of these stories and bring them up so we could kick off from where we left off. And guess what? In the actual description, where the public goes, where the public would go to click on an article to say, Julie, you're full of shit. I'm going to read what you were reading. Every single one of my links goes 404 file not found. Now, I am not verified because it was like happened 5 minutes before I went on air. I have not verified it in every browser, but I could tell you at least in Chrome, which is what is open on this machine right now, none of those links physically work. They're truncated and cut in half. Now, on the other computer, there is still a browser window open in Firefox from 10 days ago with the show open to its description, and I just rolled over and looked at some of those links, and before I refreshed that page, it is still showing that they are clickable. So if you guys want to go verify that for me, but if that's the case, then first of all, YouTube has just snafu'd an entire year plus worth of my research, just so you know. And number two, not just my research, but everybody's research. Because if they did it to me, I mean, I am not that special that they just foobarred all my descriptions only. At least I hope not. But just wanted to point that out to you. So here we go. I can't even click on any link. Like if I wanted to read you the story that we talked about two Fridays ago with the Google Truth algorithm. Here you go. Clinton creating the internet agency. Oh, look. Oh, we're sorry. But that page cannot be found. Can I tell you how badly that just pissed me off this morning? Every day it's something. All right. You know what? Here was a trick I was trying. Steal, take my title. Start with the title. Copy it. And then the part of the URL that's truncated and plug that into a search engine and bang, it's the top story. All right, so even the links don't work, but you can copy and paste. Create an internet agency, Mr. Bill Clinton. I distinctly remember when he talked about this. March 13th, 2011. Bill Clinton doesn't like all of the misinformation and rumors floating around in the internet. And he thinks that the United Nations or the U.S. government should create an agency to do something about it. Dun, dun, dun. It would be a legitimate thing to do, says Clinton in an interview airing Friday on CNBC. The agency, Clinton said, would have to be totally transparent about where the money came from. Oh, my God. And would have to be, quote, unquote, independent. Because, quote, if it is a government agency in a traditional sense, it would have no credibility whatsoever, particularly with a lot of the people who are the most active on the internet, who, like us. Oh, my God. So make sure it's not Google. No. Make sure, well, make sure it is Google. You know, Google's too big to do anything about it. But make sure it's not a government agency. We'll just have dotted dash lines. We'll put some of our own people from DARPA and it's just unbelievable. Lots of federal dollars, sprinkle money, and artificial intelligence. All right, let's finish this Clinton story. Quote, let's say that the U.S. did it. It would have to be an independent federal agency that no president could countermand or anything else because people wouldn't think you were just censoring the news and giving a different falsehood, says Clinton. No, so they just truncate all the links of all the research to make it very difficult for you to research anything that I have now told you. Remember I said, copy the title and the first part of the link, paste it into a search engine and you should see it. But how irritating is that? They just got rid of all the links in the descriptions of every YouTube video. I got to check Pigmine stuff now because that's probably going to screw up all the attribution back to the original owner. Oh, all right. So where do we go from here? I don't know. Do I really want to get on censoring the news? I mean, I think I should because this is really, I haven't even processed this yet. This is a year's worth of research that now there's no way I could go back and fix it. Just what I wanted, but we're sorry. That page cannot be found. I think that's what we're going to call the show today. All right, where did we leave off? On Friday, February 12th, 2016. $19 billion security, NSA 21, federal PSYOP, and Internet of Things spying on you. In that episode, we had talked about the head of Google search retiring and the artificial intelligence chief taking over. I wanted to kind of talk about that a little bit because that was the DeepMind project that Kurzweil is a part of that's going to be taking over the search engine at Google. And I hate to tell you, but since I was just going to be, here we go. The artificial intelligence head is taking over. Well, this is going to make it a hell of a lot harder for me to get my links together. Amit Singhal, Google's senior vice president for search and an incredibly powerful figure within the company, is retiring at the end of February. John Giandadria, the engineering VP who leads Google's sprawling research and artificial intelligence efforts, is taking his place. With the transition, Google is merging the research efforts within search, an indication of the priority of machine learning inside of the company. And the division now has the keys to the most critical part of the entire alphabet. Haha, the joke, because Google calls it Google Alphabet. Singhal is a very early Googler and has a giant force inside the company. He was named Google Fellow in 2006 for his engineering work on the early search engine. And in recent years, he's led an aggressive push for Google to improve its search on mobile. And then they, come on. Well, this isn't what I was looking for because that was the end of the story. They embedded a video. I want to find info on this John Andriana. Here we go. This is the story I was looking for. This is from October when they first announced it. Google's head of machine learning, John Giandadria, spent his professional life making computers smarter. We need to learn about him. But he's not overly impressed with their current intelligence. He says, I think computers are remarkably dumb. Speaking in a stark conference room at Google's headquarters in Mountain View, California, a computer is like a four-year-old child. Granted, that four-year-old child has become crucial to the giant search engine's competitive technology. Google is currently a leader in the searing hot field of artificial intelligence, developing computers with power to incrementally learn to perform tasks that recognize patterns in numbers and words. Hail 9000, it is not. I'm telling you guys, you know, we've seen it time and time again. They downplay. And I could tell you this has probably already got more intelligence than a four-year-old since it's winning against world champions. What was that game that this AI just won against that we read about like 2 weeks ago? And it was probably the most complicated game out there. Go, I think it was called. Way harder than chess because it's got all these different permutations. That's way smarter than a four-year-old child. So don't give me that shit, Giandadria. I don't want to hear it. He says, hell 9000, it is not, but machines learning to pick out granular information from big data, say search terms, have vast implications for business in the valley, now including toward a future in which robots can read, drive, and for all intents and purposes, think. Yeah, there's another thing. So we just found out in the last week of shows that Google got approval from the federal government for the self-driving car to be dubbed a human in regards to driving. They didn't say it was a human, but they said that he had all rights to drive. And if you had a self-driving car, you didn't need to have a license. But hey, don't worry about it, because you won't have to worry about feeling itchy to grab for that steering wheel and stomp on that brake pedal Because we'll just take him out of the car. You can get in there and drive around all day. Google will take care of you. And that's not the brain of a four-year-old child. Where's this guy coming off with, don't worry about it. It's only like four-year-old brain. I wouldn't let my four-year-old drive me around the block. So don't believe what they tell you. This AI is coming along way faster and way further than they let on every time they spew their drivel. Gianandrea, 50, was born in Bridge of Allen, Scotland. And his first attempts at humanizing machines was at an early personal assistant at an Apple spinoff called General Magic in the 90s. Its products looked like a smartphone primogenitor, but it fizzled in the pre-dawn era. Actually, I remember the mid-90s. HP had a personal digital assistant, too. I don't remember what it was called, but I was the HP lead tech, so I got my hands on one to play with. And it was pretty nifty. It was like a tiny little handheld computer, but it was before the days really of mobile graphical interfaces. It was just the very entry-level one that was chrome, monochrome with the gray background and the black text, you know? So it wasn't really any fun. There was no color. I did have a stylus, though, so I could do pointy things with it, but they were pretty lame back then, and none of them really took off. I don't know any manufacturer that really took off with a PDA back in the mid-90s. And tablet computing died, too, once then, too. Gianandrea went on to become the CTO, the Chief Technology Officer, at then Internet Juggernaut Netscape, and Microsoft put them out of business. He later, and I think they might still be around, but not as Netscape Navigator, that's for sure. He later co-founded voice recognition startup TellMe, which lets users call a number for sports scores or even for a conversation with Santa Claus. Aww. But word recognition, he realized, was just a small piece of the puzzle of the computer-human interaction. And in 2005... Gianandrea founded MetaWeb, which cataloged connections between not just words but objects. And Google bought it in 2010. Now remember I told you guys that they've been working on being able to scrape plain text. And this has been for a long time. I've been reading about them working on this. Being able to scrape unformatted text from everywhere, not just web pages, but from chats or from emails or from wherever. Text that is disparate and all over. And to be able to discern the meaning based upon the context of the words around it. See, it'll allow them to be able to crack code such as slang or to figure out when you're using code words to say other things. It's giving literal intelligence to a dictating text-to-speech program, I'd say, or Kurzweil's, you know, very interesting, too, that Kurzweil is working on this because his invention was OCR, optical character recognition. You know, Kurzweil's the one who invented the scanner. Did you know that? I bet you didn't know that. So very interesting that they are all now a part of the same project that is working on optical and physical scraping of data and then trying to use some sort of artificially intelligent sentience to decode what it means. Gianandrea often refers to Captain Kirk's computer on Star Trek, which was capable of answering questions intelligently, as a motivating idea for his early projects. Yeah, you know, Star Trek has motivated a lot of people to come up with inventions that we now see. I remember reading that Motorola, their, I had one too. I don't remember. It's early, guys, and it's Monday. I'm struggling with allergies, if you can hear. The communicator, the Motorola, it was called, oh, damn it. You know what I'm talking about? The flip phones, the early ones, before smartphones, really. They were like the cool looking flip phones that looked like the communicator on Star Trek. Did it when you'd flip it open. I had one of those. But that was also, I read the an interview with the guy who actually had come up with that phone, and it was Star Trek that motivated him as well. We're also just about ready to get some replicators rolling. I don't know if you guys saw like some of the advances in printing, but it's now gone to like 5D printing. I saw 4D printing for like 2 days in the news. Now we're 5D printing, and they're printing body parts left and right with the 3D printer. They're printing coins that can out of glass that can store data for 14 billion years on the 5D printer. So it isn't going to be too long, guys, before some of this technology actually appears on your desktop. It's pretty frightening. Anyway, Giandrea often refers to Captain Kirk's computer in Star Trek, which was capable of answering questions intelligently, as a motivating idea for his early projects. Once at Google, he spearheaded Knowledge Graph, which powers the box that pops up next to the search bar when you type a query like Sergey Brin's net worth. It uses machine learning and instantly searches databases to anticipate what you really want, and then combs the web to answer your entire question before you ever hit submit. Oh, how interesting. Not quite Starship Enterprise, but closer than most. Google isn't the only company plowing resources into AI. Oh, our good friend IBM Watson. IBM's Watson division is revolutionizing the field of cognitive computing. I'll tell you, go out to their website and poke around for a while, because IBM has been very, very, very quietly doing some scary things and slipping Watson into back ends all over the government and the corporations. I think Watson is going to be a formidable foe. IBM Watson's division is revolutionizing the field of cognitive computing, but its focus on technology is growing. Currently, more than 100 teams are working with the machine learning group, up from only a handful a year ago. And in 2015, the company's machine learning code consumed the most computing power of all of Google's systems. So, I don't know. I think that probably means that maybe they're running on a back end of some sort of Google servers. I don't know what that means. In 2015, the company's machine learning code, and this is Watson, consumed the most computing power of Google's systems. So they must maybe be leasing some server space from Google. That's what it sounds like to me. These days, one of Giandrea's big projects is the self-driving cars, for which machine learning is used to detect pedestrians, yes, and kill you if they can save lives instead of hitting the pedestrians. And we talked about that one as well. The Holy Grail, he says, is language understanding and summary. To get there, Google's engineers will need to mimic the human mind, which they're doing very well with this brain project and with some of the research that they're doing with DARPA, PTSD patients, and dopamine, Parkinson's. It's all very frightening when we start seeing all these dots connect together. This is one big, ugly, happy family. To get there, Google's engineers will need to mimic the human mind, a system still too far complex for even the most elite supercomputer to comprehend. For now, anyway. Don't worry about it, Johnny. Don't worry about it. There are no monsters. The self-driving car story. There was something that came out the other day, because we read that story about, if you were going to be creening, into a group of people. The self-driving car, of course, is going to try to do the right thing. So if you're careening into a group of 100 people and there's only 2 people in the car, they're going to slam the 2 people in the car into a wall and kill you first to save the 100 people in the crowd, because that's the right thing to do. But I don't know about you. Like I said before, my ethics aren't askew, but I do have a thing called... So, I don't know. It's the survival mechanism. You're going to do whatever you have to do. And if that means careening into the crowd, like I said, hit the horn and get out of the way. Because I am not slamming myself into a wall. And I don't think I want a car making that decision for me either. But it had to crack me up that this came out in Huffington Post. Self-driving cars could save millions of lives. But there is a catch. Will the rise of intelligent machines transform our lives for the better or push us into the abyss? Well, it depends on who you ask. Yes, don't ask Jewel. Some people say self-driving vehicles, personal robots, and the like will usher in a new era of convenience and leisure while freeing workers from dull and often dangerous jobs. Others worry that the emergent robotic workforce will mean economic devastation for workers who, after all, depend on those jobs to support their families. And we've read lots and lots of stories now. They say 50% of all jobs are going to be gone here by 2020 and replaced by robots. And, you know, when we were reading stories back last year and the year before, they're like, oh, don't worry about it. We'll take care of that when that gets here. And now all of a sudden, it's like they're putting on the alarm, like, uh-oh, it's happening way faster than we ever dreamed possible. Now what? And it was part of the plan all along. So when we read these stories about artificial intelligence, too, and they're like, oh, don't worry, it's just like a 4-year-old. They don't have anything to be afraid of yet. I don't believe them, okay? They are already pushing the limits of, I mean... If we really knew the technology that they had at this point in the recesses of the black ops of the federal government, we would probably fall over sideways. And the feds have now weaseled their way into all of these corporations with tentacles and sprinkle money, and they're all working together on this stuff. Make sure you slide a few DARPA engineers in here, Google. And then we'll send you a couple, I don't know, of our brain specialists that we've been working on. And they have all these guys. And then they just sent over what? Oh, Tammy Insel, the director, former director of the National Institute of Mental Health, to go work at their mental health division. I don't remember what it's called. Their health division, whatever new name they gave it. It doesn't matter. But, you know, all of these connections are happening. It's happening very quietly, and we're told not to worry about it because they're not that far ahead, but they're lying. Says, anyway, so as far as this robotic workforce devastating workers, you know, we saw the Chinese robot factory. Maybe it was South Korean robot factory that was making all the robots for China. It's not going to be too much longer before we start seeing factories just like China's building, where they are entire, complete factories run by robots with a few managers to watch things. That's it. As the TPP hits, we're going to hear the sucking sound like we've never heard before in this country. Way worse than the 80s. It says, and then there is the fear expressed by the likes of Elon Musk and Stephen Hawking that there are that as intelligent machines grow even smarter and more capable, they may threaten our very existence. And yeah, we did that months ago. You know, keep us as pets. Lock us in cages to keep us safe. Dr. Moshe Vardy, a computer scientist who studied automation and artificial intelligence for more than 30 years, has his own nuanced view as to whether intelligent machines are beneficial or detrimental. A Rice University professor simply says, I view them as both. Oh. Intelligent machines will bring convenience and safety, as well as higher productivity, he says, but they will also throw millions of Americans out of work. Ding, ding, ding. Vardy spoke about smart machines last week in Washington, D.C. at the annual meeting of the Association of the Advancement of Science, and the Huffington Post caught up with him afterward to pose some pointed questions. Industrial robots have been around for decades. Why are they and other autonomous systems suddenly a hot topic? Well, we seem to have reached the tipping point with industrial robots, he says, as their cost has continued to come down and their capabilities have continued to go up. Let's take a look at U.S. manufacturing. We have reached an all-time high in output, but our employment is below 1950s levels. The myth is that all jobs are going to China, but actually it's mostly because of factory automation. There are already about 260,000 robots at work in the U.S. factories, and the annual growth is in double digits. Dun, dun, dun. That does not sound good for the American worker. All right, question. Which technological advancements in particular have been the most important in the development of machines that can replace humans for many tasks? Well, for industrial robots, we have seen significant improvements in both mechanical engineering and control engineering. These robots are smarter, more agile, and cheaper. For example, the Baxter robot, and we looked at Baxter. He's got a cute little face. The Baxter robot is a two-armed robot for simple industrial tasks, such as loading, unloading, sorting, and handling of materials, which it can learn by watching a human do these tasks. It is sold for $25,000, which makes it suitable for small to medium-sized companies. But suddenly, we now have a new low entry point for companies. You don't have to be Ford or General Motors to buy factory robots. Well, question, autonomous vehicles are also seen as part of the robotics revolution. Why are they so important? Well, we know why they're so important, because it will be able to now prevent us from going places they don't want us to go. You will no longer have that bastion of freedom to step the pedal to the metal and turn up the music to go wherever you want to go. You will never have that freedom. Once they remove our steering wheels and our gas pedals, we are prisoners 100%. He says, well, the automobile industry has probably been the most significant industrial product of the 20th century. It has catapulted U.S. industry to its peak, and it has also has a profound impact on U.S. geography, permitting the growth of suburbs and exurbs. Yeah, remember, Agenda 21, they want everyone to move back to the cities. Automated driving will unleash a dramatic change akin to the introduction of the Ford Model T in 1908. Following that, we can expect the bulk of our logistics supply chain to be automated. And, you know, we did look at very briefly, they did have self-driving tractor trailers already that they were testing in Germany. Talk about horrifying, like self-driving tractor trailer loaded with goods. I don't think I'd like that too much. They scare me as it is, but I have a robot driving this big sucker with nobody behind the wheel is pretty frightening. For example, a product from China would be offloaded from a container ship by an automated offloader, taken to an e-commerce warehouse on a driverless truck, packaged there by a robot like in Amazon's warehouses, and then driven to his destination on a driverless truck and delivered to the customer's doorstep by a Amazon drone. Listen to that. No people involved in the supply chain. Question. You said you expect driving will be automated within 25 years. Will it really take that long? What's the barrier to the rise of the self-driving car? Well, transitioning from today's cars to tomorrow's driverless cars is not simple. Conventional and driverless cars do not mix well together, and humans tend to have trouble anticipating how driverless cars behave and sometimes crash into them. Oh, no. Google has reported accidents with its self-driving cars, and it's never the fault of the Google car. It's the human drivers. Yeah, because we're so damn dangerous. They're just going to make it a safety thing. You know what? New safety program. We're going to give you Americans all a discount. Or you know what? We'll let you pay $29.95 a month. You trade in your car. We'll give you a Google car. We'll give you free trips anywhere. Just push that button on your smartphone, and we'll come pick you up. I don't know. I don't think it's going to be 25 years. That's for certain. He says, we need to rewrite many laws that govern the use of automobiles on public roads. And since these are usually state laws, the process will be long and slow and agonizing. Oh. For example, current laws typically require a moving vehicle to have a driver. Well, you know what? This story was written a few weeks ago, right before they announced now that the federal government recognizes the Google self-driving car as a driver. Will the software-controlled car be considered a driver? And what are the liability laws? Well, like I said, yes, the software controlling the car is now considered a driver. So step one, check. We got over that hurdle. How will our lives be changed by the self-driving car, they ask? And what will be the benefits and what problems will they cause? Well, worldwide, about 125 million people. No, sorry. 125 million. 1.25 million people, missed a decimal there, die from auto accidents per year. And something like 95% of all of these accidents are caused by puny human brains with human error. So by automating driving, we could save about 1 million lives a year. And of course, that's what we're all about. Saving lives, roll out the self-driving cars in the name of safety. And at the same time, this change will have a huge economic impact as well, launching whole new industries and destroying old industries. About 10% of the U.S. workforce operate vehicles as part of their job, and the automation of driving will eliminate millions of jobs in the U.S. alone. But with so many lives saved, yes, so we're going to get rid of all these jobs, 50% of all jobs, and save an extra 1 million people a year. Oh, but what to do, what to do? Those 1 million people will not have jobs. But with so many lives saved, I believe, he says, it is a moral imperative to deploy the technology. We can expect an epic battle between car companies and computer companies to dominate the driverless market. Also, cars will be used much more efficiently, so car ownership may plummet by up to 80%. We can also expect a significant productivity boost from self-driving cars, since the time we now spend behind the wheel is usually non-productive. But what will happen to the truck drivers and the cab drivers and all the other workers who are displaced by self-driving technology? Well, what happened to many U.S. manufacturing workers who've lost their jobs? Many of them have found new jobs, but many have also left the workforce, which accounts for the significant drop in the U.S. labor force participation rate over the last 20 years. Not all of the workers that will be displaced by automation of driving will be able to find new jobs. But Huffington Post is getting upset. But what does that mean for the U.S. economy? Well, our current economic system requires people to either have wealth or to work to make a living, with the assumption that the economy creates jobs for all those who need them. But if this assumption breaks down, the progress in automation is likely to break it down, I believe. Then we need to rethink the very basic structure of our economic system. And I've talked about this before. So what's their solution? Well, let's just give everybody money and call it the basic income guarantee. For many, hey, we may have to consider instituting the basic income guarantee, which means that all citizens or residents of a country receive a regular, unconditional sum of money in addition to any income received from elsewhere. But share the concerns about the rise of artificial intelligence? That intelligent machines will one day do us all in? Well, yeah, you know, that pesky Elon Musk and others have worried about AI systems developing autonomy. And at this point, we are incredibly, oh yes, again, we're incredibly far from being able to build such systems. So these worries just seem a bit theatrical. Don't worry about it. In 25 years, it might make sense to talk about this possible threat, but now such talk is really just fear-mongering. Well, guys, I'm not a fear-monger. You know, if we're not paying attention to this now, what are we going to do when it gets to be the 11th hour and they're letting Atlas armies out to come find insurgents? It's a little bit too damn late. He says, we simply do not have enough facts right now to think about such threats. The threat to jobs, however, is imminent and deserves our immediate attention while we continue to monitor for other emerging threats. But, what about the development of military robots capable of mounting attacks without inputs from humans? Ah, good question. Well, many people are now calling for banning what is called laws, lethal autonomous weapons systems, by an international treaty. And the challenge is to define autonomy. I don't think it's that difficult. What kind of human input is sufficient for killer robots, he says. Well, what about a robot that kills an enemy soldier without human input in order to save our own soldiers? These are really issues that need to be fully hashed out. And yes, oh, how about killing another quote-unquote soldier in order to save our own soldier, and it ends up being a wedding party? So, but Huffington Post just stops. They won't stop asking questions. What is, in your view, the biggest misconception about autonomous systems and artificial intelligence? Well, we need to remember, and this is what I've been saying, we need to remember that we always tend to underestimate the time that it takes to develop new technologies, but also to underestimate the impacts of these technologies. AI took longer to develop than anticipated in the 1950s, but the risk now is to underestimate its impact. And we've talked about how quote-unquote evolution happens once we have computer assistance in developing the next generation of technology. It becomes exponential, and that's the point that we're at. We're at the point where we have processing power to do anything we want to do. In the old days, we never had enough. We never had enough RAM. We had never had enough CPU. We were always wanting more, more, more. And now with cloud computing on demand and supercomputers galore, and we could do arrays of, you know, processors and suck computing crunching power from all over the globe to deal with one single issue if we needed to, that's no longer a problem. I say we're in trouble, Clyde, to be honest. There is no 25 years. It's 25 and then make that exponential. If we just did multiplying by itself, that would be 5 years. I think in 5 years, we already have big problems coming. And that isn't even with that, without even like digging deep into any of this. In 5 years, we are talking like literal implants, nanotech in your blood. I just saw some other scary story that we might look at tomorrow with these shape-shifting nanotech self-assembling robots in your blood to cure cancer. I was reading that to my parents yesterday and they're like, what? Shapeshifting? Yeah, shapeshifting. No thanks. All right, and what are your fondest hopes for these new technologies, and what are your biggest fears? And it's a really short one. My fondest hope is that we will develop technology for the benefit of humanity. Oh, yes, keep you safe in cages. And my biggest fear is that we will develop technology for the sake of technology. And yes, that is exactly what is being done right now. There was one more story here. And half of these stories now only have half a URL. So it made it kind of hard to put all these pieces together today. But hold on. We're going to find it. Here it is. This is out of Quartz.com. Robots, they're just like us. Googlebot, and remember last year, the year before, between the last few years, Googlebot 8 robotics companies. Some of those were military industrial robots. Google's bot now does mundane chores like cleaning the house. Oh, is that how they're going to sell Atlas? That's what it looks like. In the future, we'll come home to find our dishes clean, our floors vacuumed, our surfaces dusted, all thanks to our dutiful servant bots. And, you know, to remember back a couple weeks ago, we had started looking at the federal government talking about hiring a new propaganda specialist to be able to spin the message to get people to buy on those pesky, resistant consumers like you and me who just don't buy any of this garbage they're trying to sell us. But look, hey, let's go after the housewife, right? Isn't that how Bernays did it? The Bernays went after the housewife with smoking and independence. And that's how they won the revolution. So let's go after the housewife again. Those poor housewives sweeping floors and vacuuming and dusting. If we could sell her an iRobot, she might be much happier. Anyway, in the future, we'll come home to find our dishes clean, our floors vacuumed, and our services dusted, all thanks to our dutiful servant bots. But until then, there's a multi-million-dollar Atlas robot created by Google that is a sibling to Boston Dynamics. Researchers at the Florida Institute for Human and Machine Cognition, working with a Boston Dynamics robot, recently finished second in last summer's DARPA Robotics Challenge. But now they are working on, quote, whole body coordination movements like sweeping and vacuuming. In the video above, and there is a video in this, Atlas seems to be completing whatever tasks the researchers can throw at it, albeit very slowly. But in reality, the robot is being partially controlled by a human, as it was at the DARPA Robotics Challenge. John Karf, one of Atlas's operators, told the IEEE that he tells the robot what it wants to do, such as pick up a bottle, and the robot will respond, showing him how it plans to pick up that bottle. I'm okay with the plan. If the robot has come up with it, I tell it to execute that motion. Boston Dynamics' parent company, Alphabet, i.e. Google, is in the process of reorganizing its robotics division. Oh, this is the first I've heard of this. It's in the process of reorganizing its robotics division within its research arm, the succinctly renamed X. Based on the haphazard cleaning of the robot in the video, including some problematic sweeping and vacuuming techniques, we are not likely to see Rosie the Robot gracing our homes anytime soon. And in the future, I can see a lot of what was done in this video moving to more the autonomous side. But I always see there being a human in the loop. And I still, again, I call bullshit on that. Again, they are downplaying these technologies. Now, that Atlas bot is big and clunky, but there are a lot of other robot manufacturers. And remember, Atlas was a military robot. There are a lot of robotic manufacturers over in Asia that are kicking our asses over here. And don't forget, too, iRobot, manufacturer out of Massachusetts, even though they make vacuum cleaners and lawnmowers, also has a branch that does military development. I still think that they just are downplaying this just to make us feel all warm and fuzzy about it. Alphabet shakes up its robotics division. This is from January 15th. Google's robotic division has been plagued by low morale and lack of leadership since the unit's founder left abruptly in 2014. And now Alphabet is cleaning it up. You know, I really would like to know why he left, by the way. So abruptly, no less. Over the last 2 months, Alphabet, the new holding company that separated Google from its collection of speculative projects, has reframed its robot efforts, moving it from a standalone division inside of Google to a piece of the X research division. The company also hired Hans-Peter Bromoto, a technology industry veteran who last worked at Nokia, to help it with its management. Courtney Hone, an ex-spokesman, confirmed the move but declined to comment any further. The reorganization of the robots group is one of several recent moves inside of the X division, which used to be called Google X, but was rebranded with the Alphabet organization and recently unveiled a new logo. A true range of companies, including tech competitors like Amazon and car manufacturers, are all signaling their interest in robotics. Everything is happening, from industry manufacturing to self-driving cars to drones to personal robots and to AI systems, says Fifi Lee, director of Stanford University's Artificial Intelligence Laboratory. X has several projects in varying degrees of completion, but has lately been, quote, graduating them as standalone companies or preparing them for such a move. The life sciences group, for example, yes, is now called Verily. That's the one Tommy Insel went to. X also recently hired an auto industry veteran to lead its self-driving car effort called Chauffeur internally. Chauffeur. Is that how they're going to sell it to us lowly Americans who are on guaranteed basic income and can't afford a car anymore? They're going to call it Chauffeur and make us feel all important as they shuttle us around and tell us where we can and cannot go. And noted that the project was a good candidate to be spun off. Robotics has gone in the opposite direction for reasons that are personal and practical. The division was created in 2013 by Andy Rubin, who led the development of the widely used Android operating system. And it has been without a leader since Mr. Rubin left in 2014 to start a technology incubator that helps young startups turn their ideas into businesses. So Andy Rubin was the lead guy for Android, who then took over the robotics division and then left to go start a startup. X, which is run by AstroTeller, is using some elements of robotics in numerous projects like self-driving car, Project Wing, which is an effort to deliver packages with drone aircraft. Yeah, don't forget, Google is also going to be delivering packages like Amazon and Walmart with self-driving drones, as well as Makani, which is an effort to capture wind energy with high-flying kites. And, of course, don't forget, like, the balloon projects, Google Loon. And we talked about one last show. I don't remember what it was called, but it was some other insane high-in-the-stratosphere cellular technology that Google was launching as well. So in December, the robotics division was moved inside of X, and the X team will first have to review the various projects and refocus them towards solving specific problems that would be reframed as a particular moonshot effort. Yeah, and that's where Regina Duggan and DARPA Dan, both from DARPA, moved over to. The group's most recent hire, Mr. Brandmo, we'll help with that process. He has a background as product manager. He graduated from MIT and has led successful internet startups, including an early digital video company, an internet marketing firm, and Plum, a social networking company, which was acquired by Nokia in 2009. And at Nokia, he developed an unannounced camera project that, until it was canceled in 2014. After starting the robotics division, Mr. Rubin at Google went on a buying spree, purchasing a number of promising companies, including Boston Dynamics, the maker of military robots, Shaft, an elite group of Japanese roboticists from the University of Tokyo. And internally, they called the purchasing of all of these robotics replicant internally, which was a nod to the movie Blade Runner, the 1982 science fiction film, and at one point was considering deals to supply robots to load and unload trucks for major packaging delivery companies. And while these companies were all promising, Mr. Rubin invested in several technologies that had industry observers scratching their heads about his overall direction. Mr. Rubin originally said the robotics division of Google would be a 10-year moonshot, and when he was in negotiations to acquire companies, he talked about the possibility of the driverless Google car rolling up to your house and a Google robot jumping off the back bumper. Oh, my God. Rubin now directs an artificial intelligence-oriented investment incubator called Playground Global, based in Palo Alto, California, a few miles from his old offices, and has received investments from Google. So you know what? Rubin is another one. They're just rolling out the tentacles. Google's robotics effort stalled after his departure, but don't worry about it. Despite the acceleration of robotics technology, they're going to be rolling stuff out sooner than we know it. Other examples of the new regulations that are being put into place are for the use of autonomous cars and flying drones. And it's coming true. All right, guys. Well, if you can even believe it, that was really fast. And we are about out of time. So make sure you stick around as Lonnie Clark is live up next. And then tonight we have some great radio at 6. This week's Our Interesting Time with Tim Kelly. This week's at 7. Corbett Report with James Corbett. At 8, Unlock the Door with Michael Cross. 9, brand spanking new, Truth on the Tracks with Brandon Turville. Cutting Through the Matrix with Alan Watt at 10. And live, Anti-Media Radio. Up to now with the Gritty TV Schwartz.